Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I know we got people all over the world, so I don't know about you all. It's a beautiful day where I am, a little chillier than normal, but probably not as chilly as some of you. In any event, we've got a pretty interesting topic today, and it's quite timely as we now approach the holiday season. You know, most of us, when we get about, when this time of year comes, we always seem to feel like we never have enough time. And in today's world, with all of our deadlines and all of the hustle and bustle and everything that we have to do, we normally don't think too often that time is really on our side. And like most of us, I probably live in a linear time mode, too. I mean, I look, my weeks kind of look from Tuesday to Tuesday, since that is the day of the show. And then everything kind of falls within a linear pattern within that weekly time period. But, you know, as a genealogist, we also look at time linearly. We look at our pedigrees generationally and, you know, backwards linearly. And, you know, it's really interesting, too, because, you know, when you think about it, we're really just a little blip on a screen of time. I mean, you know, some of the spiritual teachers that I work with say that, you know, we really are just spirits having a human experience. But, you know, the concept of time is, very, very interesting. And, you know, when you work on caseloads like I do in genealogy, you know, you start to see that you can actually layer, you know, these different cases on top of each other. And, you know, lives seem to have taken on different patterns, and they seem to be taking on similar things. I mean, I've had a lot of cases where we have murder mysteries, and, you know, they all seem to have some relative experience to them. And I guess that's where, you know, I wanted to take us, because, you know, we do live in a world where we see time linearly. And my guest today is someone who's written a novel called The Tapestry of Time. And it's really a book about the concept of seeing time in a more relatively than we do today. You know, one of my, favorite people, Albert Einstein, who came up with the whole theory of relativity, kind of really got me going on it. I don't know if y'all were around when I did the show with Jude Kurovan, who wrote the book on cosmos, and it's all about quantum physics. And, you know, interestingly enough, Albert Einstein, you know, worked on his theory of relativity when he was playing his violin. It's really kind of a whole fun concept. But in any event, my guest today is Joan Newcomb, and her book, as I mentioned, is called The Tapestry of Time. And we're going to delve into the concept of the novel and the subject matter, which, as we have seen, is going to be all about time. But Joan's background is that she's the owner of Life Transformations Unlimited, and she's a natural empath, trained clairvoyant, spiritual teacher and counselor, and she's helped people with personal and spiritual growth for the last 30 years. And we're going to talk a lot about time today, and Joan, welcome, and we're going to talk a lot about some of the other things that you do. Before we get going, though, I want to give out our call-in number. We will be taking your calls. Joan actually does readings, too, so we're going to talk a little bit about time and those kinds of things. So the number, 1-888-815-9756. Well, Joan, welcome to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect. You know, this whole concept of time, and especially now around the holidays as we're rushing around and bustling around, the whole concept of time really is not what we make it to be. I mean, I guess when we go back in time and we look at lives linearly, that's really not what time is all about, is it? And he did, didn't he? I mean, he used to chase light beams back and forth. Because, you know, as spiritual beings, as we might say, you know, we really are just bundles of light. And we move around. And, you know, for those who can see it and feel it, you know, we can see that pattern of light. So, go. Correct. Yes. So, you know, what kind of brought you to the point of writing this novel? And, you know, I know that we want to get people to go online and buy it off your website, but, yeah, let's just talk a little bit about the concept of the novel and some of the concepts perhaps that you discuss.
Well, it's a very interesting thing because the story of the novel by itself is an interesting story, and I wrote the original version back in 1996, and I had little kids then, so it took me that long to get around to actually publishing it. And it had grown out of a story that I had made up back in junior high school when I was watching, I was a Trekkie, I watched Star Trek shows.
Right.
And I came up with, back then I would write scripts, I was in junior high, and I would write scripts based on Star Trek and on Hogan's Heroes and MASH were my favorite shows. And so I came up with a story plot that was based originally on Captain Kirk, and then when Star Trek Next Generation came along, it was based on Jean-Luc Picard. It was sort of interchangeable. When with the captain meeting someone when he was just a cadet at the academy, and then running into them again when he was on shore leave as the captain of the Enterprise, and then running into them again a short time after. And don't want to give away too much of the story plot here, but then years and years later, when my youngest was finally in preschool and I had some time in my day, I sat down to try to write that original novel, and it just flopped for me trying to put it into the Star Trek genre. What shifted is when I decided to make the main character just a real ordinary person. He's an architect named Paul who lives in Seattle, and suddenly the story took off all by itself, and I started writing nonstop. It was like a giving birth process to get this story out, and I ended up writing actually two novels. I wrote this story and its sequel in a 4-month period. I just didn't do laundry for 4 months.
Uh-oh.
And looking back at it now, there's some things that happened during the time while I was writing it. Since a lot of things in my life started accelerating along with creating this book. There's an aspect to the book where there's mystery and there's romance, but there's also erotica, and it disturbed me at the time how much of it was erotica. And so, because, you know, I was a minister, I was doing all these weddings, maybe that contributed to it. A lot of wedding night energy there. But I would have these talks with God about writing this book, and asked God about this particular issue, and God said that this information is necessary on the planet at this time, and that people would read this novel that wouldn't necessarily pick up Deepak Chopra. So it's got all these elements of things so that there's something appealing to different people, and then the spiritual information and really the cosmic information that's in there, you know, will filter in. So it was meant to have a wider appeal. And the thing is, back in 1996, when I first wrote the first draft, I had no idea about matrix energetics, which is something I have just in the last 3 years I've become a practitioner and have incorporated it into my work. And it is all about working with morphic fields. Its essence is quantum physics. And there are there's a way to play around with time in it. And people who have gone to Matrix Energetic seminars have had bizarre things happen to do with time.
Why don't you explain some of those? I'm real curious myself.
So there are two different stories that I heard from people who had gone to seminars. And one was there was a person who the seminars are these very intensive 3-day weekends. And this woman had, you know, gone through the first intensive day, and she knew she was going to have to get up early the next morning to get back to the hotel where it was being held. So she went in at, it was 10:50. She looked at the clock. It was 10:50, and she wanted to get to sleep by midnight. So she went in to take this bath, and then she, you know, you space out in the bath, and she was there long enough for it to get cold and fill it up with hot water some more and get cold. So she did this 2 or 3 times. And then when she finally was wrinkled as a prune, and she got out and walked outside, all the clocks in her house still said 10:50.
Whoa.
She had been in that bathtub for long enough. You know how long it takes for your bathtub water to cool down and then to heat it up again.
Sure.
So the next one was somebody who had been to the seminar, and this happened to him a week later, because doing this sort of morphic field work has a reverberative effect. And he worked at home, and he decided to take a lunch break and take a bath then. So it was another bath story. And he turned on the water, and then he went downstairs, and I'll finish the story. He forgot about his bath, and about a half an hour later, he ran upstairs, and the bath water was still filling up. And, I mean, the plug had been put in and everything. There was no leak. It's just like inside that bathroom, no time had passed.
Wow.
So little things like that, or level, I'm sure all of us have experience just on every day.
I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Sure, people have experienced driving. I'm going to switch phones here.
Okay.
How's that?
That's better.
Okay. So I'm sure people have experienced driving in their car to try to get someplace and anticipating it taking X amount of time. And usually in this linear world, we anticipate things taking longer. But I have talked to people nowadays that have experienced it taking shorter than it's supposed to. So it's something I feel that is happening, you know, on a cosmic level, where time is becoming more liquid, and it's just a symbol of everything that is transforming.
And it is transforming. I am a firm believer in the fact that things are just, you know, that it is changing. I mean, it's dramatic. I have experienced some of these things too, from time to time, so to speak, you know, where I've been working on something and, you know, I'd look at the clock and I feel like I've worked for 30, 40 minutes and, you know, it's like I hadn't been gone.
Yes.
And it is quite a strange sensation. You know, you say, wait a minute, you know, I just thought I did all this work and no time has passed. So in one respect, you know, it's kind of nice because, you know, getting a lot of work done. But, you know, this whole morphic field, explain that to me and the audience. I'm not sure I totally understand that whole concept.
It's a challenging concept, and I'm not that eloquent, but I'll do my best.
Well, I mean, I think we know what morphic means. I mean, it's something that transforms itself kind of slowly. I mean, from being a visualist, the morphing of a picture from, you know, you to a lion, for example, and that, you know, how you can morph something visually, that's where I'm going to begin my my definition of
okay,
what
well,
we're
actually,
talking about.
And I'll give you more of a visual image. Did you ever watch Star Trek: The Next Generation?
I'm not a Trekkie.
Oh, they had this on the Star Trek: Next Generation Enterprise. They had this entertainment system called the holodeck. And it was a giant hologram. And if you stepped into it when a program wasn't running, it was just this giant square, blacked out room that had a grid.
Okay.
But what they could do is they could program the computer, and with, for instance, the story plot of their favorite novel. Say they were into 1930s murder mysteries or something, and then they would step into it, and the whole scene would be the murder mystery with, but it was three-dimensional, and it was real, you know, that people were so real you could, you know, touch and feel them, and you could taste the food. And it was a form of, you know, it was a sci-fi idea of entertainment in the future for, you know, people who were on a long spaceship journey. Well, so the idea of the morphic field is that we're consciousness and we exist within this morphic field, and the morphic field is like the holodeck, and we've actually created this illusion called physical reality from it. And so, and the patterns of it run both through time, so we have this illusion of the past going to the future, but we also have this illusion of density and distance, and you know, we have these physical bodies that feel dense, and the walls feel dense. You can't walk through walls. It takes time to go from one place to another, and there's distance. All those things are that make up this physical reality, from this perspective, is actually an illusion created by consciousness. And the thing I didn't consciously realize at the time I was writing this novel, but I have the third one going on in my head. I haven't put it pen to paper yet because I'm final editing the second in this series, this trilogy. But the past is more dense than the future, and so when you go to the past, time was slower. We feel like time is speeding up. Well, that's right. You know, the past things, the vibration of it is slower, it's denser. And as you, in your mind, you know, or in this illusion of reality, go towards the illusion of the future, it's vibrating higher. It's a faster and lighter pace. So it's why we can remember past lives, but we can't really get in touch too far into the future, because it's a little bit like being able to read old software for old computers and not being able to read new software.
You know, and I think too, and you know, being a genealogist, which I am, you know, I spend a lot of time, you know, chasing dead people for people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have certain limited resources and records that we can, you know, use. And like I said in the opening, I mean, when we track, you know, the past of someone, you know, a lot of it is in 10-year increments. I mean, you know, we know where they were in the 1880 census, and then we have a 20-year gap, and then the 1900 census and the 1910, so forth. And then, you know, we get to 1930 census records, and we don't have access to them. The 40s is coming out soon. And, you know, you look at the time and how you can actually embrace an individual when you're studying their past and their history and that kind of thing. But you're doing it in these huge blocks of time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas today, you know, everybody knows what everybody's doing every 5 minutes because of Facebook and Twitter.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's you know, it's an amazing thing. And I mean, I think, you know, I mentioned this on one of my shows too in the past, that although the privacy issues, you know, that are being addressed are are pretty, you know, not there anymore. You know, this whole way of communicating at this speed, and speaking your mind and speaking your thoughts, is I think pretty much all part and parcel to this whole shift, in my opinion, because people are now starting to really get in tune with each other, and they're starting to learn about each other just by tweets and what people post on Facebook, and you learn more about people just by watching what they post than you know by getting in, you know, being with them physically, you know, at a function or a gathering or dinner. It's really, to me, quite an amazing generation of communications tools.
You know, I've just read somebody's blog the other day who had all these connections on Twitter, and they were somewhat professional connections. And then he went to a gathering of them, and he hadn't met any of them in person before, but he could tell who they were simply by knowing their tweets.
You know, it's interesting. You know, my involvement, I was involved with the Internet back in 1987 before it was the Internet. I mean, it was very, 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 you know, used just for the government, you know, to pass information along and VBSs and whatever. And I mean, you know, when I started this Internet social networking group, which you would call it a social networking group today, back in that time period, you know, we had hundreds and thousands of people joining us, and, you know, we knew them by their email address. And it was really a kind of a phenomenal thing. I mean, it was the first wave of this whole concept of the tweets, is that, you know, and you would go to a function and you would meet them for the first time, and, you know, it would be their email address that you would identify with. So it's, you know, conceptually, it's just been a growth of, you know, the whole Internet concept. Over the last, and, you know, look at the time period, 1987 to, you know, that's almost 26, 27 years. Is it? 23 years.
Yes.
I lost count. But, I mean, you know, that's eons again of time that it's taken to get from the beginning of the Internet to where it is today.
Yes. And something else that I have observed is that, I feel that we're always trying to replicate spirit, and so technology is striving to replicate spirit. So email used to be our attempt of replicating telepathy, you know, and you know, we invented airplanes so we could fly, and it's becoming more and more instantaneous. So, you know, Twitter is just the refinement of it. Ultimately, where we're going to try to get to is back to the essence of spirit, which is that we are all one, and we're all just, you know, aspects and reflections of ourselves. We have a little bit of ways to go, but...
No, yeah, we do. But I think that the movement... you know, I mean, towards 2012, I think, you know, I mean, there are some people that think that it's going to be the end of the world, and other people think it's going to be the end of the world as we know it, as, you know, more and more people begin to embrace, you know, the whole spiritual concept of themselves and who they are, and, you know, and it's, you know, I guess back to the old hippie days of peace, love.
Well, I'm curious about it because the Mayan calendar had just originally, my original understanding, and now I've talked with people who've studied this more, but my original understanding is the Mayan calendar simply said that time was going to end in 2012. And so I was thinking, well, that's interesting because, you know, I mean, I wear my watch everywhere except in the shower, so how could I get through a day without having a watch? And then, you know, that's when I realized that time was a conceptual thing. And that it just will be our concept of time may end, and that could be very challenging for people. Now I've sort of come to a realization that it's going to be a consciousness shift, which may or may not be perceptive to people. My theory is that we're going to have a 100th monkey syndrome. Do you know about the 100th monkeys?
No.
There were a group of scientists, and they were studying this one breed of monkey that lived on a South Pacific island. So they were on one island observing this breed of monkey. And one monkey figured out how to wash fruit. And monkeys don't teach each other. They learn by copying. And so other monkeys observed, you know, the washing of the fruit, and the monkey's offspring, you know, observed the washing of the fruit. And so pretty soon there were all these little monkeys were washing fruit. Well, it got to a point of about 100 monkeys washing fruit, and suddenly, instantaneously, all the monkeys, all of that breed of monkeys on all the Pacific Island, all at once started washing fruit. So and this is actually written down scientifically. I just don't have the name of the breed of monkey and the group of scientists doing it. But
okay.
you can Google this, folks. and so they believe that there was this genetic connection between all the monkeys, that when it hit a tipping point, it became just part of all their inherent knowledge. So I believe that we're going to hit 100th monkey, so to speak, with all of us that are, like all your listeners today, are interested in leading edge things. They're interested in not quite mainstream stuff. They're interested in what's going on out there. And so a bigger perspective of things. And we're going to hit a point where enough human beings on this planet are going to have their consciousness or their awareness raised that I believe instantaneously everybody will get it. So I don't think that anyone's going to die. I think maybe, you know, an ego aspect is going to dissolve. But, you know, your Aunt Fanny, who's a, you know, devout Republican and Catholic, is just, you know, is going to get it too. And it'll be, at that point, it'll be a painless transition. But while we're going through that raising of consciousness, it's going to be increasingly uncomfortable for people who are stuck in rigid or past beliefs, stuck on our unmoving beliefs.
Right. I mean, you know, and too, I mean, I know that, you know, I've mentioned this on a couple of occasions, and, you know, you don't know because we haven't really talked, but, you know, I had a near-death experience. It'll be 3 years, January. And that changed my life. I mean, everything in my life changed due to that. And you know, my whole concept of the world changed. And, you know, what happened to me, which I had absolutely no clue what was going on, is I started getting the number symbols on my everything I went to. I mean, I was 11-11 or 111 to death.
Uh-huh.
For the first few months, and I mean, I could not, I had no, I mean, I had done no research. I mean, I was not anywhere, you know, into this whole, I guess, you know, spiritual awakening concept. I just know that I, you know, that, you know, everything had changed inside of me, and everything was changing. And, you know, it was so uncanny that I finally did go to the internet, and I just typed in 1111, you know, and all of a sudden, poof, I came up and I started, you know, doing a lot of reading. And, you know, I found Hay House Radio, and then I, you know, started really studying. And, you know, and then, you know, over a period of time, the numbers started shifting. And then it was, you know, I started getting a wave of 444s and a wave of 555s.
Mm-hmm. I have two, yeah.
And, I mean, it was, and again, uncanny. You know, that you could just, you know, there was a week period where I swear I got in my car, I turned on the gas, I looked at my digital clock, and it was ones. I mean, either 111, 1111, 1111 at night. I mean, it was 1111 during the day. I mean, it was just uncanny. So, you know, that got my attention. I really did feel that at that point in time, you know, I was, you know, being directed somewhere. I had no idea where. And, you know, that's kind of you know, now, a year later, or, you know, or two, you know, with this whole concept of where genealogy and spirit connect, because, you know, genealogy really is going back in time, and studying who we are, and sometimes, and really learning more about who we are because of those who came before us. And I mean, it's, to me, a very spiritual experience. I think that's why I got involved in it. I just never saw the connection as I do now. But, you know, I think that I too still have some semblances of, you know, going back into, you know, this whole linear concept, and I'd like to get out of it. There are times when I just, you know, say, you know, let it be. And, you know, whatever happens, happens, and I'll do what I can. And, you know, I don't get all, you know, upset over over time. And I know that I'm happier than I am when I'm, you know, trying to rush around and, you know, beat deadlines and make appointments. And, yeah, the other interesting thing is I used to wear a watch all the time, and I haven't put one on in over a month. So that's an interesting, now that you brought that up. But, you know, how do people like myself, sometimes included, and those that are, you know, working and overwhelmed with their work and trying to keep their jobs, and, you know, we're really there, they're run by time. And so much so in some cases that they don't have time for anybody else. And you see this time and time again. You know, is there an easy way for all of us to be able to conceptually, you know, let time become the illusion that it really is, and live and let live, and just be and do what we can?
Yeah, the answer is yes, and it's not necessarily time that you focus on, but it's where you're focusing from,
right?
Then time just becomes part of the picture. What I suggest to people is that they, instead of thinking themselves as a personality that's in a body that is in this lifetime, and lifetime is happening to them, you know, time, you know, their boss did this, you know, their boyfriend did this, to start to see themselves as the essence of who they are, which transcends this lifetime.
Right.
So you as essence are greater than your story plot and your physical form, and your circumstances. And when you start to view things as, I call it spirit, as spirit in a body. When you start to view things as spirit, it totally changes your experience of your life. And then you start to have a bigger picture, and it's easier for you to make decisions, and to actually step back from the drama of things. I'll give you an example. Your physical body lives in this physical timeline, and it gets born, and then eventually it's going to die. So it takes things very seriously, because it's not going to make it out of this lifetime alive. So on its very basic level, it looks at anything that's happening and has to decide, is this going to kill me? You know?
Yeah.
And when you go through a very big change, your body often feels like it's dying, because it doesn't have any way of understanding what it hasn't lived through yet. You as spirit have had many lifetimes, and you take this particular lifetime a lot less seriously. It's a little bit like owning a car, okay? You happen to really like the car you have right now, but, you know, you had one before, and when this one becomes a clunker, you're going to get yourself another one. So, And there's a confidence too, because you've driven the routes before. Actually, you know, car is not a good example. Horses are a better example, because it's you as the rider and your body as the horse, because a horse has a personality, and the horse can get kind of shy, you know, about
right.
going over the trail, especially if you have ridden it hard in the past. And a lot of us, when we were younger, rode our horses hard and down trails that they don't want to go anymore. So if when you start to shift your perspective as your expanded self, as your essence self, or as spirit, you shift from that bigger perspective, it just changes your experience of life. And then you do start making changes in your life. You start taking risks that you wouldn't have done before when you were being the powerless little, you know, person in the cubicle that you were on Monday morning.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I know that I guess people can be there half the time and be, you know, where they were half the time. You know, I guess they're, you know, sometimes you know, I feel like I'll get to that place and then all of a sudden something will happen and I'll kind of revert back to the old place. And, you know, I guess it's going to require a lot of, really a lot of exercise, you know, to be able to stay in that one place. I know that I'm the most happiest when, you know, I'm in the spirit place.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just, you know, let things go and don't worry about things. And, you know, I mean, my life hadn't been, you know, a piece of cake over the last year and a half. But, you know, I did. I had faith and I trusted and I didn't panic. And, you know, I can honestly say that it works wonders. And now I got more work than I know what to do with. And I'm trying not to panic about that. You know, I'm taking every day in stride and saying, okay, you know, this is what we wanted and this is what we need. And, you know, we're just going to do what we need to do. And, you know, I found that to work so much better than trying to make something happen, trying to will something to happen. You know, and it is a totally different, place than what most of us are used to living in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess in your lifetime, I mean, were you always in this place, or, you know, have you pretty much had to go on through a series of shifts and turns and bends? And
I've definitely gone through a series of shifts and turns and bends, and I'm a trained clairvoyant. It took me about 20 years to realize it was a natural empath. So my training to do readings, I just thought I was just any ordinary Joe. So I've come to learn that everybody is psychic. They just may call it something different, and everybody has a different aspect of psychic ability, because it really comes from being spirit. So everybody's spirit. You know, some people are artistic. You know, some people are musical. You know, if you're a visual person, then you're naturally clairvoyant. If you're a musical person, you're probably naturally clairaudient.
All of those.
Yeah, and so,
and
so you're multilingual.
I tell you, I feel everybody's pain.
Yes.
And you know, that's yeah, that's something I have had ever since I was a child. I mean, I've been there. I just, you know, took a different road over the course of my life. I mean, there was a period of time, you know, growing up, I was your typical, probably, indigo kid. I had all my spirit guides and all these people that I talked to and played with, and I didn't need any friends. And then I, you know, got out of that and went to college and had, you know, the real life experience, and got out of college and went back into, you know, the spiritual stuff, for a short while, and was actually doing readings and scared myself. I was so accurate, and so I quit. And then I took a 20-year hiatus or so, and now I'm trying to get back into it because I think that's where I'm being directed. I know that's where I'm being directed. So
yeah, the world is calling for talents like yours, yes.
So, you know, I'm starting to do readings a little bit. I'm not doing them heavy yet. But, you know, what I'm trying to do, Joan, is use some of these skills in the research that I do for other people. And especially some of these hard luck, tough, you know, cases where there really are no records, or they're hard to find records, or you have to find them in places that you would not normally look. And I've been working on some systems internally and physically, you know, that I've been using to work through some caseloads that I'm finding to be absolutely, you know, some wonderful, you know, divination tools, I guess, is how I might put it. And so far they have guided me in a lot of the right places, and a couple of times they haven't, and, you know, I'm trying to work through why not. So, yeah, that's really my goal in life now, is to get, you know, take the genealogy from the standpoint of, you know, your standard run-of-the-mill genealogy work to connecting with spirit, and that's where this whole concept of where genealogy and spirit connect comes from. So I've been 1 year in working on this, so it's going to be interesting, you know, where this goes over the next few months and years, I guess, as we progress through and retrain ourselves and relearn ourselves. So, but, you know, from a time perspective, getting back to the time, you know, I'm letting it take its course, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to rush it, and I'm not trying to say, okay, you know, by such and such, I'm going to be able to do this. I'm just saying, this is where I want to go. Just take me there. And so far, it's worked just really well. I'm really excited about it. So, but, you know, it is an interesting concept of and I mean, I know that I've had a couple of, you know, readers and intuitives and psychics, so to speak, on the show who, you know, I think it's an incredible tool for missing persons and, you know, finding people that, you know, the paper trail ends and you have to really dig deeper than what is physically available to you to find out where to go. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you know, I can just tell, you know, when you're looking into somebody's life, even though what you're looking for may be, you know, birth certificates and, you know, graduation certificates or wedding, you know, documents, just to try to figure out those sort of things about them, you are also getting a sense that there's a human being lived here, you know, and the sense of their travel through this lifetime. So, and it's, and, you know, human beings are interesting, and our life stories are interesting, and if you step back and looking at it as forms of patterns, it's a beautiful tapestry throughout history.
It is. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, when I first started my own genealogy, I found a book that my great-great-aunt wrote called The Fabric of Our Lives. So, you know, I kind of was, you know, intrigued with the title of your book, The Tapestry of Time. It's all interwoven in some, you know, linguistic syntax, I guess. You know, because really the fabric of our lives is really who we are and how we became who we are because of where we come from. And, you know, it's, you know, I think the whole concept of time, though, is so, I really like this whole illusion of time. I just, I really like that. I'd like to live in an illusion of time so that You know, I just get to be. And I don't know about you, but, you know, I know the during a peak period in my career where I felt like I was working all the time and I really didn't have much of a social life and I wasn't doing anything but working and so forth and so on, you know, there were times when I just wanted to, you know, I just want to be. And so now I'm kind of in that mode where I am in a position where I can just be. And I really like that. And I think that that's something that you know, those of us who have had career paths for most of our lives don't allow ourselves to really be.
We get caught up, with our career paths. If you think of that, really strikes a chord on what I've been doing readings lately. People come in for relationships that talk to me about relationships, but they also talk to me. There's a lot of questions about their career path, and I've read people who are laid off and they're sending out resumes. I've read people who were laid off and then they got hired again at a different, you know, company and same kind of job, and then 10 months later they get laid off again. And what I believe is going on right now is a call to right livelihood. So we're all being called to be in integrity with our essential self. And that may not be, you know, being a paper pusher or living in a cubicle, 40, 70 hours a week. You know, so what I see all these layoffs and I see this sort of what's going on with the economy is it's forcing people to break down the concept of what supports them. And when they find their right livelihood, some money does flow in to support them in very unusual ways. So that's what I see what's going on in the bigger picture of things.
You know, and I agree with you, and I think that, you know, that we all, you know, I mean, there was a time where I thought I was doing what my life, was fulfilling my life's purpose. There was no question. And, you know, then I had this near-death experience, and I realized very quickly that, all right, you know, okay, what's going on here? And I remember, I guess, and just a little wisdom, you know, a situation that happened to me when I was in my 20s, and, you know, I had a skiing accident, and there were some things going on within the workplace that I was working at the time that did not sit well with me. And I really felt that, you know, I was brought down at my knees to have the time to think about what I needed to do. And at the end of the day, after 9 weeks of being laid up, and at those days, knee surgeries were totally very different and very very different in the way they handled things. But, you know, I decided I'm not going to be there. And that's when I started business number one. And, you know, it really is interesting. You know, and that was also my feeling about this past situation 3 years ago, is that it was another call, and I just, you know, I wonder how many of us have to have these kinds of calls to wake up.
Well, it usually involves a risk of some sort, you know, if you get used to taking risks early on, then they're not as dramatic as a near-death experience. But, you know, sometimes it's a near-death experience happens to radically put you on your right path, you know?
Yeah. This is proof pudding, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no question. There's no question in my mind that's what this did. And, I mean, it guided me. I mean, it is just, it's been one of those one, you know, really phenomenal, leading, everything led to something else. And, you know, the stories and the synchronicities and the things that would happen, you know, at certain points during this, you know, journey over the last year or so, you know, has been absolutely amazing. If you let it be and, you know, you let spirit guide you, and it'll be you would be amazed at the things that it will tell you to do, and you'll go and you'll look it up and bingo. I mean, there it is. Everything's right in your lap, and you just have to let it happen. And I think that's what most of us do, is we get so into our heads and so into our egos and so into our, physical being rather than the spiritual being, that, you know, we don't always see the signs, and we don't always, take the appropriate action. I mean, I know I had a situation come up where I knew it was wrong. I mean, there was a pit in my belly, and I didn't listen. Now, it was probably a good thing at the time, because perhaps if I had listened, I may not be doing what I'm doing. Or maybe I would have been doing it years earlier. Who knows? But, you know, that's the second, you know, the biggest awakening I think I have, is that when I have a pit in my belly, I stop, I don't do anything, and I have to follow that gut. So, in any event, you know, from a perspective of, you know, this whole matrix energetics kind of thing, when you work with clients, and let's just talk about some of the things that you might do, because we may have some listeners that might be interested, is that, you know, do you work with them from a consultative point of view? Do you work with them from a reading spiritual point of view? Do you do merge both?
It depends on what I'm doing, because I am a certified life coach. I do mystic mentorship coaching.
Okay.
And then I also do psychic readings, and I do matrix energetic sessions. So it really depends on what they're coming to me for, whether they're getting one of those things or a mixture. And by the way, when is this show complete?
In about 7 minutes.
In 7 minutes. Okay. I had it completing earlier, because I was going to say, people can contact me at my website at joannewcomb.com. That's NEWCOMB.com to find out about these services. But my perspective with working with people is that, you know, you are an essential expanded being, and so you have your inner wisdom. So as a life coach, although I have all my mystical aspects, I would more teach techniques for you to use that would empower you, and I ask you powerful questions that encourage you to connect to your own inner wisdom, and then implement changes in your life, transformations in your life from that spot. It's an empowering thing. Matrix energetics can bypass the intellect and create transformation on a body, mind, spirit level in just phenomenal ways. Just in one session, you can do that. A lot of people may come initially for physical ailments. And I'm not a medical intuitive, so I don't tend to work that way. And what usually ends up happening is they go home and they finally can incorporate their business and get their name on the title to their house, and all these other things start to fall into place,
right,
as well as the fact they find that they don't have that ache and pain anymore. So, and then with psychic readings, that's me looking at the energy that's being presented to me, and I will do psychic advising. I'll tell you what I see the outcomes are for certain, you know, things that you're anticipating, or, you know, if you're having relationship problems, I'll tell you what I see going on with that other person.
Right.
So that's kind of a little different thing.
Now, on your psychic readings, are you basically, I'm just curious on my perspective. I mean, do you actually see images?
Or
yes. You sense things?
It's both, because my initial training was as a clairvoyant. It took me years to realize I'd look at something and I'd go, well, I feel this. So how I've developed doing it now that I'm primarily by phone is I will have somebody say their first name, and then I can tune into, instantly I get a picture of the main color in their aura and the energy that's surrounding them, and then as I start to describe that, then I get clearer images of what's going on in their life. So my original training was colors in the aura, and so that's kind of my touchstone. But then, you know, so for instance, let's say they're having relationship problems, I'd say, okay, well, just say your first name and say your husband or boyfriend's first name, and then I can see whether or not the their partner is facing them or turned away or reaching out towards them or reaching out towards somebody else. You know, so I get shown by the image of that individual what's going on. And then I can also talk to people who have passed by their saying their first name, and then I can see what's going on with the, you know, their deceased loved one as well.
So you can do that?
Yeah.
You know, I really think that there's a place for this in genealogy. I think there's some people in the genealogy world that think I'm a little nuts, but I really think there's a place for this. So
totally, because you know, I sort of feel that it's a two-way street. That, you know, suddenly you're interested in finding out more about your relatives. Well, your relatives are interested in having you connect with them and validate they're still real, even if they're not in physical form. So can you imagine, you know, as a genealogist, being able to develop this ability, you'd suddenly know where, you know, their birth certificate is or where to look for it or what they were doing in 1918, you know.
Right.
So,
It's interesting. I mean, and it's starting to develop. I mean, there are some things that I can grab hold of really quick. And others that isn't coming. So I'm working on it. I'm really working on it because I really see it as an incredible additional tool for the field.
You know, what I recommend to people when they're just getting started with communicating with not the non-physical, and
right.
And this works for communicating with deceased loved ones, but also with your spirit guides too, or just talking to God, and that's sitting down with a journal and writing down your question and writing down what you think they're telling you. And you may not hear words, but you'll get impressions. And
right.
Then when you look, read it over later, you go, "There's no way I could have made that up." So very simple.
It is simple. Joan, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful hour, and I've really enjoyed. You know, the topic, obviously, it's, this whole concept of change, I think, and change both within and within the whole existence of our world that I think that we all feel is shifting. I think it's been a great hour, and I really appreciate you coming on short order, and hopefully we'll do it again. Anyway, Joan gave out her website, and I'm going to give it again. It's www.joannewcomb.com. Her new book is called Tapestry of Time, and it is a novel, but it's got some pretty interesting stuff in it. And I'm Susan King, and this has been Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect. We will see you next week. We have an interesting guest. We're going to be talking about the whole crypto-Judaic experience, which is quite something, with Dr. Stan Hortus from University of New Mexico. So, until next Tuesday, we'll see you then. Have a great week.